This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Frida Liu. Now, it wasn't so long ago that I looked into the mirror and felt a little bit old because I hit the age of 28. Today, we talk on our shows where we often refer to people from the new generation, the Gen Y and the Gen Z, and generation that I do not belong to. Mm-hmm. And I suppose life could be worse. So anyway, on Resource Center, we're speaking to the folks from Perspective Strategies and Sense. We've done a nationwide study to understand young Malaysians' media consumption habits, purchasing behavior, and assessment of talent and career opportunities. So we've covered their habits and purchase patterns quite a bit on Resource Centers. Today, we're going to delve a little bit more on their behaviours when it comes to influencing their careers. So Andy C from Perspective Strategies and Fui K Sung from Sense, welcome. And just before that as well, how did you guys get together to do this study?
Thank you, Frida. I think the real reason why we've decided to embark on this, from Perspective Strategies, we're a stakeholder engagement agency. And we felt it was important as part of stakeholder engagement to actually have a listening exercise to understand the most important stakeholder for the future of Malaysia and also Malaysian consumers, i.e. the youth, people who will be entering the workforce over the next 12 to 24 months. I mean, these would be your market for consumers, your market for talent.
Yep.
So we felt it's very important, and we decided to come together with Sense because of their expertise in public policy, in research, and we thought that by working together, we will be able to get to develop a research that will be robust and useful for the Malaysian consumer and public market.
Okay.
Yeah, we thought that it was a good combination between youth perspective and Sense, simply because we of course, being a research-based company, we want to look at a very strong methodology approaches, and that would give us a very good, robust results to be able to apply that, at a nationwide level. So I think we also want to make sure that, whatever we deliver to the clients what it really says it is out there, you see. Yeah. So the interpretation, of course, is very important based on the data that you can, you see.
Yeah. Right. For example, Frida, one key aspect, for example, that a lot of us take for granted, even consumers, companies going out to do consumer research, that, when we got together with Sense, she emphasized how important it is, for example, to have a robust sample size. Yeah. Mm. So that's why we polled 2,000 over students around the country. And, for example, another aspect to it is that never forget Sabah and Sarawak.
Yes.
Hence, one of the key deliverable that we ensured that our study covered was students from Sabah and Sarawak, which we felt was very important, not just from the online survey and physical questionnaire, but we actually did focus groups in Sabah and Sarawak itself.
Okay. Yeah. And then you see, you call it youth because if it falls between the Gen Z and the Gen Y, so it's just youth basically in that age category. So let's start with the five key facts about young Malaysians and see how that links to the vision of your career.
Yep. Of course, some of it it's given, you would know. I mean, for example, the first key finding would be the smartphone is their best friend.
Okay.
I think they will leave home.
Also mine.
For example, the younger generation, they can leave home without their parents, their friends, but they can't leave home without their handphones. No matter how far they are, they will drive back home or to take the transport back home to get their smartphones.
Uh-huh.
I think that's one of the key facts. Second interesting key fact would be the young Malaysians are actually very discerning and skeptical, i.e., they cannot be just spoon-fed information. That means, they don't look just push information. Pull information is equally important, and they will weigh the information that they get, before they actually take in, whatever input that they get. So in that sense, it's a key finding that we believe is important, even from us as marketeers or trying to communicate public policy, is that you need to convince them before they buy into a particular information.
Not so easily sold to.
Yes, yep, right. Third would be, the views of families and friends matter most. Mm. I think this is something that while a lot of us do come across it every day, but we never really sink in terms of how much impact families and friends play in terms of the younger generation.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Andy there, and this study has been really quite it was an eye-opening for us too, that actually motivated us to conduct a separate study on the different generations, baby boomers, the X and Ys, and we didn't go into the Zs, but we went to the Ys, and really family values and religion, for example, is one of the top key things that are very important for especially urban youths, I think.
All right. So the fourth takeaway would be this is something that all of us are facing in Malaysia as well in terms of the talent crunch.
Yep.
Young Malaysians want to work abroad.
Wow.
You know, as much as more than 50%. In fact, it's 70% of younger Malaysians want
for
to
good?
Work abroad. But of course, in our focus group discussions, we did find out, you know, while they want to go out and work abroad, a lot of them love Malaysia. I mean, let's all acknowledge that this is a blessed country. We all love to our char kway teows and our mamas. We want to be back in Malaysia. But, you know, there are a lot of reasons why a lot of them want to go out, but they all want to come back to Malaysia at some point in time.
I think it's mainly because of the way they see the education system, the weaknesses and the gaps in there in terms of getting life experiences and practical experiences are one of the biggest, I think, if you will, the criticisms of the, you know, the current system, in that it provides them with very limited life perspectives that they need, you know, to go out and to survive or you know, have a more meaningful career. And in fact, just to relate a very a personal story, the other day I was just speaking to my daughter's tuition teacher, and she's actually a lecturer in law she's a master's student, and she said she's actually giving tuition to first year students in our local universities. So I was shocked because tuition is for high school and you know. And even at this point in time, even our university students are actually having to go for tuition. I mean, that is just amazing. I mean, universities are meant to be like, you know, research-based. Yeah. You know, you're supposed to discover mistakes for yourselves.
Yeah.
And if they're going in that trajectory, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, at university, if you're still going for tuition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which brings to the last fifth key takeaway, i.e. majority feel they're ill-equipped for the workforce.
I think that kind of like gels, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of them feel they're ill-equipped not only in terms of language proficiency, for example, English, but they also realise that they lack the soft skills, they lack the real-life experience that would allow them to succeed in their career. So that's another key takeaway. And I would say these are the five key points that...
If you say there's five key points, I guess four and five will be more in terms of the what implications for organizations, right? So what are the implications? I'm just thinking, you know, wanting to work abroad as well. Just did you all delve deeper? So they want to work abroad to get experience, or then, you know, they want to go abroad because they want to earn more money, you know, and with the intention to want to come back.
Yeah, of course, the grass is perceived to be greener on the other side always.
Yep.
You know, but a lot of them also acknowledge that they're not sure if other countries are better, but I know there are more opportunities elsewhere. This is one of the anecdotes that we got. The top three reasons for wanting to work overseas, actually 45.2% cited political and social reasons. Right? Another 43.6% cited that the specialised field or opportunity that they want to do is not available in Malaysia. And then, of course, another 42.1% cited poor career prospects in Malaysia. And, of course, we have to realise that we're also up against the region where it's very competitive. I mean, it's easy to get a job in Hong Kong and Singapore when, because of currency, you know, it would be double or triple what they're getting here. So these are the various factors that, you know, sort of pushed them to consider working abroad as well.
Right, and the danger. So I guess when you look at that, what does that mean for organizations? How can you even try to retain, you know, do we have the best talent here, you know? Because the thing is also, the moment you work overseas and you've got the experience, you've got the money, and then you start settling down, it's very difficult to want to come back. You know?
Yeah, I think this brings the issue of, I think even... the organizations in Malaysia need to be a bit more creative in the way they retain talent. For example, one key takeaway that we found from the research as well, while salaries attract, they do not retain. Because majority of the youth that we had discussions in the research find that they want to look for organizations that will give them the learning and development opportunities. So I guess in that sense, Malaysian companies need to sell that aspect, i.e. the opportunities that they can give to retain them and also to attract them to work for them in the longer term. So I think it's one area that we need to be a bit more creative in terms of how do we continuously provide the students the learning opportunities. Now, they may want to work overseas because it's sexier or whatever, but perhaps companies then need to be a bit more flexible in providing them training opportunities outside of Malaysia, or even, you know, exchange programs or or with if they have branches overseas. If they don't, there may be other opportunities like sending them for an overseas course in the longer term.
I think maybe also partly, you know, local companies, whether it's the GLCs or you know, your local SMEs, they're seen as being very profit-oriented and very profit-focused, you know. And in that sense, the you know, these are young people who have, you know, gone to, they're all university students, so they have some ideals, for sure. And they know what is, they have, in fact, when in our separate studies, has shown that youths, they have an ideal. They know what healthcare system should be like. They want good education system. They want good healthcare system. They want a good they want good infrastructure, trains that work, and buses that arrive on time. I mean, that is kind of like the basic thing that they're looking at. And then this is for them is the benchmark. Although you can say it's an ideal, but they know exactly what they want.
Right. And so they're more well-traveled. They've seen.
Yeah, they've seen. You know, they've seen what's out there, and they've seen it on the internet. Even if they don't travel or they don't have the opportunity, even Sabah and Sarawak as well, they know what is, you know, what is possible. You see, so when they look at some of these things, and I think part of that wanting to have that kind of experience and not seeing that in the local companies, giving them the opportunities to be able to grow and to be able to develop their own skill sets, they feel that they're kind of being hampered in if they don't get those, you know.
And I guess when organizations say triple bottom line, they really have to mean it.
Yes,
you know,
correct.
And not, you know, so as you were saying, you know, they're just profit centered. But when you really talk about triple bottom line, it's a nice thing to say, but you really need to live that.
Yes,
way.
And I think our local companies really have to look at, you know, HR in a much more holistic.
And then because
this
generation is skeptical and discerning, it is even more important that when we communicate, for example, we say we're sustainable. We you know, triple bottom line. Yeah. We got to mean it and we got to show it.
Yeah.
You know, it cannot be just lip service because over time, when they see that those things not happening, it would
discerning
really
and skeptical. Yeah. Point number two.
Yes. So it's very important for organizations to also realize that when they communicate something, it's got to be consistent across platforms.
Yes.
You know, and it has to be.
So
you know,
if you come up with a employee handbook, you better mean what you say. You know, it's not just a nice kind of like a manual or a material that you throw in there.
Okay, we'll continue our conversation on this, the youth perspectives study on and focusing on talent and career. After this, I'm here with Andy C from Perspective Strategies and Fui K Song from Sense. Stay tuned, Resource Centre, BFM 89.9.
Bond frustrates Moneypenny. BFM 89.9.
This is Resource Centre. Good afternoon, Frida Liu here. Andy C from Perspective Strategies and Fui K Song from Sense. We're talking about a nationwide study they did, Youth Perspectives, Talent and Career, and we're going on and on in between as well. And you saying that from this study, you know, parents play a very important role. How so?
Yeah, Frida, I think one key takeaway that we really treasure in terms of this research that gave us a sort of an eye-opener in terms of how we communicate with this future talent pool, future consumer pool, is that the views and of their parents matter a lot. Parents and friends have a lot of influence. For example, the study revealed that 62.3% of them agreed that parents' consent is a key factor in their career decisions.
Wow.
I mean, it's no joke now that, you know, when you see, you know, when you have a major recruitment booth, a lot of parents come along. You know, we've had companies telling us that, you know, there are so many parents waiting for their kids in their job interviews that they have a special lobby area for parents to wait so they don't crowd the.
I would
the
have fallen into the 37.7%.
I think this is one of the really Frida. This is one of the really distinct features that we found with the this generation, and it seems to concur with, you know, even the worldwide studies too, that there is actually a lot less conflict, intergenerational conflict.
This is nice to know.
You know, in the 70s, if you remember, you know, there was the baby boomers, you know, protesting against really the older generation, the pre-war generation. Yeah. So when the streets and you had the whole, you know, hippie culture and so on and so forth. And then you had the X generation, which counted to be the first generation that's actually being sent to daycare centres and brought up by single parents and because that was the, you know, in the 80s, the 70s, 80s, you have the, you know, divorce was escalating. I mean, now it's no big deal, but back then it was, you know, a big thing if your parents were, if you came from a broken home, so, you know, even has that kind of labelling, you know. So that, I think all that is gone and is no longer an issue, you know, but having a single parent, coming from a single parent home is not an issue anymore. In fact, there's actually a lot more, or rather less, a lot less intergenerational conflict here, which actually, when I spoke to some sociologists overseas, and they are a little bit concerned with this kind of trend too, simply because, you see, when you, the way they see it is that when there's no conflict, there's no innovation. So, I mean, it just depends on how you see it. So what we're seeing is that, you know, at 62.3% say that they defer to their parents on even purchasing things, you know, whether it's a car or so on.
Because the money's from them.
Mama and Papa fun, right?
Yeah, but of course, even, but even about 66.8% actually say they prefer getting a job through referrals from families and friends.
Wow.
So again, it shows there's a lot of reliance on the parents to show the way. Perhaps it's also because the younger generation today have parents who are more educated. Because a lot of their parents are working professionals who have a lot of experience in various aspects to it.
You know, what was very interesting as well, you know, how they, the fifth point, how they were ill-equipped for the workforce, right? So, I mean, how can organizations then leverage on that, you know, when they are aware that they are ill-equipped for the workforce, or they feel that they're ill-equipped for the workforce? You know, what are the opportunities for organizations then? So what kind of training, apart from sending overseas, what can they do to bridge that gap?
I think organizations, the major skills gap were, like, for example, language proficiency and soft skills. like leadership, like interpersonal skills, communication skills. I think this is where organizations need to customize their training and development programs to address some of these key areas. Very interestingly as well, even which may attract, you know, the Malay and Indian talent pool, is that they're aware that having poor Chinese language skills is also a challenge to them. Reason being, they feel that, you know, with the growth of China as a global market, they know that if they want to be very competitive and would be able to sell themselves as a global talent, they need to also master Mandarin, or at least know Mandarin. So as many as 38% of Malays actually cited poor Chinese language skills as a key challenge, and 39% for Indians.
And that's very logical and very commonsensical of people to know that it's just, you know, it's just business. It's just, you know, being progressive in that sense. That's good. What about their views on entrepreneurship?
Yeah, again, this is something that the younger generation, you know, looks up to a lot of entrepreneurs, particularly in the digital world and in the new economy, so to speak. So the competition for talent is no longer versus your competitor for or other companies, because they also want to be entrepreneurs. And I think the speed in which we reward talent got to be reviewed, the paradigm, because they feel that by being entrepreneur, they can move up the ladder much faster. So in that sense, organizations need to create organizational structures that are perhaps more flexible, less layered, you know, so that if they are well-equipped to be promoted, they should be promoted, you know, on purely on merit and how fast they can deliver for the company. So that's the way. And perhaps organizations need to be leaner and create more sub-units where, you know, everyone can drive projects or within the organization, so that the entrepreneurial spirit can be cultivated from even the younger talent pool.
I know there were also some things that maybe moves away from Korea, but there were some things that were not published but were quite, you thought was quite prevalent, you know, in your discussions. Would you like to share some of them?
I think because my perspective is always from a public policy viewpoint, and understanding this new generation of citizens going into the marketplace, if you will. So civil servants, you know, civil society, will have to look into some of the characteristics of this, you know, the characteristics of this generation, as Andy puts it. There is certainly, as I said, you know, a lot less conflict-oriented generation. So anything that's politically related, including environment, consumer organization, anything that requires you to challenge authority, actually has very low traction with this generation. So you know, so on one hand, you know, this, you know, less conflict is good, but you see, you then grow, you have a generation that's less has less tendency to challenge authority. But on the other hand, things like religious organizations, arts, music, entertainment, sports and recreation is very much higher on their list, like 27% of them say that they belong to some sort of religious organization. So that kind of concurs with the traditional values and, you know, family values, going back to the family and so on and so on. So they like that kind of family-related activities. Humanitarian, you know, charity organizations, those kind of things, yes, they like to get involved. Sports, definitely, but really less so for on the political side.
Right, which is quite scary because they're going to be, you know, spearheading and changing the direction of the country. Yeah. You know, we've got elections in a couple of years. If you haven't registered, please do so. And you know, this is the time. And you, I guess if whatever your concerns, and I'm just making my own conclusion here, whatever your concerns for your future, your career and all that, it all really comes back from public policy.
Correct.
And, you know, needing to be aware of it, or maybe they were just jaded. Anyway, so back to employers and all that. So what are some of the top three considerations for employers as we conclude today's session?
I think for employers or organizations, key things is that we got to, besides meeting your new employee, so to speak, I think today you got to meet their parents too. So I guess when you have literature promoting your organization, you got to appeal to their parents as well.
That's why you advertise on BFM. You have one thing for your kids, right? You know, this will go to their parents.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, so in terms of attracting talent, you know, that's why global companies, I think the more progressive ones like Google, and they already have Parents Day where parents can see what their children are doing in organizations. Second thing, I think salary and benefits may attract, but a compelling culture in the organization that will retain this younger generation.
Yeah.
I think that's a key thing. Three, I think a reputation is more credible when it's conveyed by trusted third parties. So we know that the future consumers, the future talent pool, listen to their friends and family. And this is, you know, where you can get in their attention. I think this also shows why a lot of people now, when I'm trying to book a hotel, I don't look at the advertisement from the hotel. I read
the reviews and the ratings.
So it's about friends, family, about experience. This really shows why we need to change the paradigm in how we communicate.
Right.
So I think the fourth would be messages need to be consistent across all platforms. You can't, even in stakeholder engagement, you can't tell a particular stakeholder in one room one story and tell it, because it can be recorded. There are 14 million journalists out there. You know, it's just out there,
that's right? Yes.
So then finally,
it's on YouTube somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. And finally, I think we got to activate and engage meaningfully. I.e., you know, because they're discerning, they're skeptical, it's just not one-way communication. You got to get them involved and get them to really truly see and appreciate what you're trying to say and do. I think that's the major five top implications for organizations.
Anything to add, Fui?
Well, I think this applies all across the board with the way I think, even including civic engagement, the principles apply in that they, I think the newer generation really want some sort of interaction, face-to-face interaction. It's not good enough to just set up a Facebook and by a ministry or by an agency and think that, hey, people are going to come to your website and even Facebook for that matter and think that people are going to... as if people are going to be constantly reading your Facebook. Hey, no, you know. People got a lot more things and a lot more friends to do out there, you know, parties to attend. Just because you have some sort of online presence doesn't mean that you... people are going to read your information. Not at all. You know, you've got to make it meaningful for them, and it's got to be referred to. It's got to be a trusted product. Product meaning even public policy has got to look at it as a commercial perspective, in the sense that you've got to understand, you know, citizens are consuming your policy, if you will, and you need to sell it like one, you know.
Right. Okay. Thanks for being with us, Annie C from Perspective Strategies and Fui Kay Song from Sense, talking about youth perspectives, talent, career. We got an appropriate song after this, you know, Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall.
No.
BFM.
Just came back from
Thank
Berlin,
you for that.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.